It's the Popmatic Podcast for December 7th, 2016.
Hello.
Best. You're the best around. No one's gonna
have a hamster. Simply the best. Yeah. Better wow. than
I feel like karate chat.
I don't think we have rails for which to go off now.
No. Oh. Those are his music cues. He's going to splice those in.
Oh.
All right.
Awesome.
Simply the best.
Better than all the rest.
It's the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Jeremy, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Bill.
Sarah.
Clem Marie.
Mike.
Hey, so the dumpster fire that is 2016 is mercifully going out. We got some
Thank
rains
you,
here.
Thank you,
November rains.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Nothing now it claims Gatlinburg. Jeez.
Yeah. So.
Is there anything that 2016 won't claim?
Yeah, well, there's still a little bit more time left.
Yeah,
let's see.
Yeah,
there's plenty of time for that dumpster fire to flare up
that's
again.
That's right. That's right. It's going to be just burning diapers and needles all day long. So, what a horrible year. Good thing, one place we've all found solace is in our good old friend. Books. They're more than half the story. They're our friends. And it's time once again to share with you, our longtime listeners, our favorite Woo. Books of the year. We're going to go with our top three. We're going to lightning round this because we got each of us have three. So get ready. Best books of the year.
Yep.
Amanda, start us off with your third favorite book of the year, or if you don't have an order, pick one that you like and want to talk about first.
Number three.
Mine are in order.
Number three.
All right. So there were a lot of books I could have talked about on this podcast for my best of. It seems like I read a lot of good books this year, more than usual, at least I can remember. I read some stinkers, too. Sweet Bitter, I'm looking right at you.
Burn.
But by and large, most of the things I picked up this year were enjoyable. So my number three pick is going to be the Deadpool series of graphic novels by Brian Posehn and Gary Duggan.
This is you're
you've totally corrupted
you're
me.
You're blowing minds.
Wow. What madness is this?
So this was my year. 2016 might have sucked for Jeremy, but it was my year for Deadpool. And I blame my husband, which I don't know, maybe he's an appropriate mascot for 2016.
What, did he kill a bunch of parts?
Is he a dumpster fire?
He's been busy.
Did he say Gatlinburg on fire? Did he like...
You're saying Deadpool is for 2016, not your husband.
Okay. No, not my husband. No.
Yeah. No, I don't blame my husband for 2016. He's got a sniper rifle filled with disease.
That's gross. Okay, so anyway, my husband got me started on Deadpool way back in February when our Valentine's Day movie was Deadpool starring Ryan Reynolds. I enjoyed it so much that I started seeking out the comic books. Now, there are a few different series by some different writers, but my favorite is the Posehn and Duggan series. It started in 2012 and ran for 45 issues. The series starts with Deadpool fighting the dead presidents. It also includes his wedding, which I just got a big kick out of. It's hilarious, and I love his wife. So the library has all of these in an 8-volume collection, except for number two, which is called Soul Hunter, but I can probably get that for you through interlibrary loan. So if you love Deadpool, you've got to check these out. Bill?
Before I begin, I'd just like to say all three of my books are what I consider to be page turners, and all three, interestingly enough, were written by women. So
go, ladies.
Wow.
Number three is The Wolf Road by Beth Lewis. The Wolf Road has been described as the road meets the night of the hunter. In this post-apocalyptic world, some kind of war has happened, or as the heroine of the story, Elka, refers to it as the big stupid. Times has been turned back, and it's been Western times now. Elka, our scrappy tomboy heroine, is being pursued by a man named Trapper, a man who has taught Elka how to survive. This is a wonderful cat and mouse story. It's an excellent adventure story. And in the book, there are a couple of coincidences that happen that I find hard to accept. However, it does a fantastic job of creating atmosphere. The dialogue, to me, was just off the charts. It's brilliant. So, The Wolf Road by Beth Lewis is my number three.
Editor's note. Great segue. No, really.
I chose this book as my number three, partly because I wanted to provide some diversity in my choices by adding a nonfiction book, but also because having recently finished it, I really, really enjoyed it. Nothing like sarcasm and quirky little stories to teach you unknown history, but that's what you are getting when you choose to read Sarah Vowell's Assassination Vacation.
Love.
No, this book didn't come out this year, but I rarely ever read books the year they were published, except for my number two choice. So don't be surprised if you don't see any of these on the New York Times best-selling lists or on any best of the year lists. However, they're on my list and should be on yours as well. I mentioned this book a couple of weeks ago when we were discussing politics. It seems so long ago. But at that time, I hadn't really gotten too far into the book. Now that I've finished it, I can tell you that you learn way more than just about assassinations. In a fun come-along-with-me-on-this-pilgrimage sort of way, Sarah gives you details about three presidential assassinations, Lincoln, Garfield, and McKinley, but also all about the characters involved. For instance, do yourself a favor and look up the history of the Oneida Dinnerware Company. You'll be thoroughly perplexed. I listened to the audio, but the library has it in several formats, so check it out.
Does Sarah read the audio?
Yeah, that's right. She's
that
doing
makes it
reading.
Doubly good.
And then she's
the best voice.
It's like a cast of characters.
What's his name? John Stewart does one voice.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah,
I would have said it was number three with the bullet myself.
Okay, so unlike Bill, who you know, who has all women for his top three choices. I got all men choices. I don't know. Does that make me a bad feminist? Roxane Gay book from last year, I want to say. But anyhow.
We won't judge you.
I'm talking about books that were published in 2016. And the number three book that I'm going to pick to talk about is The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead.
Nice choice.
Yes, it's a good choice. It was picked by Oprah as part of her book club. And it was also recently won the National Book Award for Fiction. So the conceit of this book is the following. What if the Underground Railroad, the famous, of course, system and network of people that helped enslaved persons escape from the South into freedom in the North and beyond, what if the Underground Railroad was in fact an actual railroad underground with stations, conductors, railroad tracks, and everything?
I thought it was when I was little.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Me too. I think everybody
I didn't get it until I was like seventh grade.
it's a metaphor.
Well, Colson Whitehead took that idea and made a reality. In the book, two slaves, Cora and Caesar, are trying to decide to escape the South. And the story is chilling. It is all the more pertinent to read it today. It is another page turner. It will make you look away in horror, but also it'll make you cheer when good does eventually triumph over evil in some respects. So read The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead. It is a really good book. I previously read another of his books, Zone One, which is a zombie novel. Mm-hmm. Underground Railroad is completely different from Zone One.
Weird.
Completely different. Apparently, according to some reviewers, Colson Whitehead really does try to switch it up some. So read The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead. Michael.
I read that. I thought it was pretty interesting in that, like, in addition to that, like, each state was really different.
Each state where they go to is really different, has its own horrors.
Tennessee is on fire.
Tennessee is on fire the whole time, yes.
Which was to be
topical.
Yeah.
And there's eugenics experiments there.
Yeah.
And also it pulls from other points in history, not just the Civil War or Civil War period.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting book. It blends modern history with some modern history conceits with the Underground Railroad, and it's obviously set before the Civil War. So it's a very good book. I really enjoyed it. Hmm. Thank you, Michael.
No problem, Clemarie. Jeepers. Well, you know, going scriptless today, gang. So if I say a lot of ums and ers, totally
Don't
my fault.
Don't worry.
You know, I'm McGee. Number three for me, that kind of rhymes, is
kind of.
Sort of. Sudden Death by Alvaro Enrique. I mentioned this before on the podcast. This is the one where Caravaggio and a poet named Quevedo play tennis.
What?
In like the 1500s.
Quevedo plays tennis? That's awesome. Verde que te quiero verde. I think that's the poem he wrote. Keep going.
That, sure, sure. You know, I looked up his stuff. There's not much in English, but apparently he's a much bigger deal in Spanish.
Yes, he is a big deal.
Yeah. I thought he was made up at first, but no. He has these goofy little glasses and stuff. Mm-hmm. Anywho, but it's kind of, it's about a tennis match, but it's also about, like, you know, the fall of the Spanish Empire and the rise of Mexico and, like, the birth of Mexico and, like, Cortez and his family are, like, major characters and Malinche and it's really good.
That does sound really interesting. It's very experimental.
It's very, like, it's told backwards. Like, you know, they start with the match and you don't really know why they're doing it until the very end. And, you know, you start with, like, Cortez's, I think, great-granddaughter is, like, this noble woman in Mexico who wants to go to Spain to, like, marry a guy and stuff. And it's really interesting. It's kind of like a look at history, the other side. And then he goes into the history of, like, tennis, which is interesting because I knew nothing about tennis and how it's it was very different back before they had the balls that could bounce.
Evil robot interjection. This was the notorious peasant ramp episode.
Yes, yes. Tune back, gang.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah.
Which one of us said peasant ramp?
I think you did.
Yeah.
And then, like,
I feel like you did.
Yeah. There's pictures.
I remember the context.
I looked it
up. I mean, they hit it over a roof or something?
Yeah, they didn't have, like, a net. They, like, yeah. hit it, like, bounce it off the roof to each other.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it was pretty neat.
Yeah. Anyway, I think what I said was timely.
It's very, very experimental, very weird. I liked it. It's good stuff. What do you got, Jeremy?
My number three favorite book of 2016 is Hot Dog Taste Test by Lisa Hannawalt. Her 2013 book, My Dirty Dumb Eyes, is hilarious. She is a production designer and producer for the Netflix show BoJack Horseman, and this book follow-up to My Dirty Dumb Eyes is also hilarious. It's profane, there's toilet humor, and there are a lot of just like one-page gag comic strips about menstrual huts, the non-sexual appeal of otters, pros and cons of breakfast, anthropomorphic food, food. There's lots of food in this book, I guess hence the title. Lisa Hannawalt is able to turn all this stuff into really laugh-out-loud gag cartoons and, like, really beautiful sometimes, too. Like, there'll be, like, hot dogs swimming in a lake or something, and then there's, like, toucans and the trees, and it's just beautiful. And there's, like, simple line drawings and stuff. If you have to be a smarty pants to make dumb jokes work, then she is a genius and maybe the funniest person in America. My favorite bit in the book is she has these, she says she was hired to do some rebranding. I think maybe that's just a joke, but there's like proposed corporate logos and slogans and stuff. And so she has one for, it says Subway, food option. And then there's a drawing of Colonel Sanders. It says KFC, brown rainbows of food. And then can you bleep me when I say this?
No, that's technologically impossible.
Okay. So, and then there's another one with the Nike swoosh, and it's like, just do it already. And then it's Nike, just do it and be done with it already. It's great. I love
30
it.
30 Rock reference. There was an episode in which Kenneth had to life bleep an episode.
Oh, great.
Awesome.
Oh,
gosh.
That sounds good. Anyway, this book is amazing, and I loved it. And I will forever read anything that she does until she writes like some sort of serious memoir, and then I'm done. Amanda? Ouch.
By the way, Verde que te quiero verde was not a Quevedo poem. It was by Federico García Lorca. So Lorca. Completely wrong time period. Oops. That's the only famous Spanish poem I know. Amanda, please continue. Spanish from Spain, beg your pardon.
In show correction. All right, number two. Okay, so my second favorite book was Moscow Nights, the Van Cliburn story, How One Man and His Piano Transformed the Cold War, written by Nigel Cliff. I liked it because the title's really long.
That's just the book,
that's the only reason I liked it, because the title was wrong. I'm still working on it. Now, if you had told me when this book magically showed up on my desk, I would have loved it as much as I did. I would have just have shaken my head, because books about musicians are usually things I make myself read because I consider myself a musician. I feel like I should know things. They aren't necessarily books that I can't wait to get back into in order to see what happens, but this book was. It was very engrossing. It also inspired me to practice more. Not that I'm going to learn the Tchaikovsky First Piano Concerto or, you know, anything by Rachmaninoff right now, but you get the idea. Just sidebar, that stuff's hard. Like, it makes me tired just thinking about it. So maybe I wouldn't have found it quite so fascinating if I had to live through all the Cold War stuff, because it's about the Cold War and Russia and America as much as it's about a great pianist. But I could not put the book down, so thank you, Book Fairy Lori, for making sure that I read this book.
Bill?
Number two for me is The Woman in Cabin 10 by Ruth Ware. Lo Blacklock, a travel journalist who gets a dream assignment to travel on a luxury cruise, and she needs it. She's just been a victim of a robbery. On the cruise, Miss Blacklock sees a woman being thrown overboard, or did she? A wonderful twisty thriller, a good summertime read, which is when I read it, but it would also be a good winter read. The novel has been compared to the works of Agatha Christie, so I'm giving my highest recommendation in my number two pick, The Woman in Cabin 10 by Ruth Ware. Sarah.
Right on. My number two is Salt to the Sea by Ruta Sepetys. Having already mentioned another book by Ruta Sepetys a couple of weeks ago, Between Shades of Grey, I bring you the somewhat almost a sequel to it as my number two book for the year. Salt to the Sea is another teen historical fiction novel that again tells the story of a World War II tragedy that took place in the Baltic Sea in January 1945. The ship involved, the Wilhelm Gustloff, kind of a fun name to say, was real, as was the tragedy that occurred. Beruda tells the story of what happened through the eyes of a group of teenagers who have all experienced some form of grief or tragedy during the war. The story plays out as these teenagers, forced together by circumstance, begin to trust one another to secure safety for all. Yes, this book will make you cry and wonder why I would enjoy a book that brings such pain, but it's because, for one, I learned another piece of history I did not already know, and two, because Sepetys is such a powerful writer. There's not all sadness in this book, but it has a soothing and bittersweet ending. It also has a connection to Between Shades of Grey with one of the characters, and it was actually published this year, so that was my only one that was published this year that I read. So yeah, Clem?
Yes, I read Between Shades of Grey, and I really liked that book. It also made me cry. Okay, so my number two book is a memoir, which almost made me cry, but also made me rage. So, Just Mercy, A Story of Justice and Redemption by Bryan Stevenson. Bryan Stevenson is the founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative, which is a Alabama-based organization that has worked to defend the indigent, overturn the wrongful convictions, and also advocate and overturn the convictions of children who were then placed in the adult penitentiary system. So this book delves deep into the dark heart of the American criminal justice system and its many, many faults, and how people like Stevenson are working to address those faults and rectify those faults. Just Mercy is primarily the story of one of his most famous cases. It's about the case of Walter McMillian, who was an innocent black Alabama man who was sentenced to death for the murder of an 18-year-old white woman. And Bryan Stevenson goes through the whole case and how it was constructed. And yes, you will rage when you see sort of how at every turn a case is manufactured against this man because he was Walter McMillian, because he was a convenient figure, a black business owner who had also recently had an adulterous affair with a white woman. So he was a convenient person upon which to pin this upon. Bryan Stevenson also shares details from his own life, so it's a memoir of his life as well, growing up in poor in Delaware, and then going on to Harvard, and then seemingly jettisoning all of that privilege that possibly could represent to work for very little money and do dangerous work down in the South in Alabama. On one particular note of irony, and Bryan Stevenson brings this up again and again, is that the Walter McMillian case took place in Monroeville, Alabama, which is the home of the town that Harper Lee wrote about in To Kill a Mockingbird. And there's a lot of museums over there about, you know, the To Kill a Mockingbird and Harper Lee, and about, you know, that book, of course, was about a case against a black man. And then, you know, here's another case against a black man, which is completely unjust. So Just Mercy, A Story of Justice and Redemption by Bryan Stevenson. It's an excellent memoir available in various options, print, audio, ebook, and e-audiobook from our public library. Read it is my number two choice, Mike.
Wow. Now something completely different.
Yes.
Yeah. So the greatest tragedy of 2016 was not Amanda's husband killing David Bowie, but it was indeed that Shocktober was a total bummer, gang. It was everything I tried to turn to, yeah. But
I will say mine was scarier than anything you recommended.
Probably. Hey, actually, yeah, ours was really good. But the scariest book I read this year, I read in like, I think February or something. It's available on digital means. I don't think Overdrive, the other one that has books.
Hoopla?
I was going to say Hoopla. I wasn't sure about that. Anyway, I think it's available on Hoopla. It's called Experimental Film by Gemma Files. It's about a Canadian film critic slash filmmaker who finds a silent film from, like, I think, like, the teens. And the person who made it, like, is this woman from, like, Eastern Europe. And she used the film to summon a goddess that was, like, unique to her tribe to kill people. And it's got this kind of weird, like, Lovecraftian vibe that kind of, like, you know, you're not really sure, like, what this thing is and what it wants and, like, why it wants to kill people using film. It's also kind of like The Ring, I guess. It's like The Ring meets Lovecraft in Canada, eh? So there's a lot of stuff about, like, you know, Canadian film. Like, the main character is obviously based on the author, Gemma Files, who herself was, like, a former film student turned, like, author and stuff. And I think that what she did is she kind of took the worst aspects of herself. Because, like, the main character is, like, kind of has, like, Asperger's or something. She's very, like, doesn't really do well with, like, people. And her son is autistic. And so there's a lot of stuff about, like, how autism works and, like, how, you know, her son, like, works, you know, is okay some days and sometimes is really just a terror. But she can't, like, you know, be mean to him because he doesn't understand.
Oh, you can still be mean to him.
Yeah. Says the one father on here. Oh, you like for a named son in a cage?
Yes. If only. He'd probably like that, actually. Yeah.
It's an adventure. Let's play pirate. We like them.
Anyway, Experimental Film, Gemma Files, it's super scary. Check it out. What have you got, Jerry?
So my number two favorite book of the year is a novel by Donald Ray Pollock called The Heavenly Table. Now, his 2009 short story collection, Knock 'em Stiff, is a collection of interconnected stories which take place in his hometown of Knock 'em Stiff, Ohio. So the title of the book sort of tells you something about the nature of those stories. They are violent, coarse, and light on the BS. His first novel is called The Devil All the Time. And like the collection Knock 'em Stiff, those are both contemporary stories. It focuses on people like with drugs and all this stuff. The Heavenly Table takes place during World War I. Pop-matic favorite, World War I. and it's a whole bunch of different stories of different characters, and they all kind of all meet and come to a head, which seems to be a theme of things that I'm reading this year, or maybe that's just the way all stories work, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing when I read. So this primarily the story of the Jewett brothers, Cain, Cobb, and Chimney, who leave their lives of toil with their father, who is crazy, and they become bank robbers. They model their bank robbing on an old dime novel that they have, and only one of them knows how to read, and they all have memorized the stories and stuff. Then their lives sort of become entwined with this farmer who's lost all of his savings to a swindler. There's a closeted army officer who's set up at a new army camp in southern Ohio. There's a guy who cleans outhouses for a living and also, like, peeps in on people. There's a serial killer and all kinds of seedy folks in the book. It is very, very violent, but really beautiful, really great story. He was at the Southern Festival of Books this year and speaking with Brad Watson on a panel, and he was just really thoughtful and down to earth seeming, and I got a copy of this book signed, and just really friendly seeming dude, but and a really great writer, and I look forward to, and his personal story is also very great. We don't have time to go into that now, but I recommend this book for you to read, everyone. Amanda.
I might pass. Okay. It sounded a little bit more bumpy than
you don't like outhouses being cleaned?
Yeah, you know.
Or be peeped on while you're in the outhouse? Is that what you were leading into?
I think that happens in one instance. Yeah. Yeah, this guy does. He's proud of his job.
Okay, number one, are we ready?
Yes.
Number one. Okay, so my favorite book of the year was The Royal We by Heather Cox and Jessica Morgan. And this one surprised me, too. I didn't expect it to be my favorite book of the year, but I thought it was just going to be this light little girly read. Oh, it's so sweet. Isn't that so nice? But it actually had depth and a lot of heart, and I found myself captivated by the book, and several people about got punched when they made me stop reading it.
Dang.
That's a good book when you want to punch people.
I'm very lonely. Ah, my face.
I need to request a book. someone shut up, I'm reading.
I'd like to request an eye doctor.
So the basic premise, it's a fiction story, and the basic premise is that American Rebecca Porter attends Oxford University and stumbles into a relationship with the future King of England. So if it sounds familiar, it's because it's based on William and Kate's story, kind of in a nutshell, which I thought would make it wimpy, but it really didn't. This is a book I wish I could read all over again for the first time. It wasn't what I thought it would be, but it ended up being so much better.
Editor's note. Great segue. No, really.
My number one book, and I've already talked about this on a previous podcast on Tickle My Fancy, and I said it would be on my top three, and I put it at my number one, and the book is called All the Missing Girls by Megan Miranda. Its basic plot premise is two young women disappear from a small town a decade apart, and the story is told in reverse. The lead protagonist is Nicolette Farrell, and she is a victim or femme fatale? Nicolette comes back to her hometown of Cooley Ridge to take care of her father, and she gets involved with the past and present mystery. I love this book, All the Missing Girls by Megan Miranda.
Right on. Well, now my number one, I've also mentioned before, it's The Nightingale by Kristen Hanna. It's among my favorite genre of books. It's also one of my favorite books I've ever read, so it's a given that I'd pick it for one of my favorites for this year. You could call The Nightingale a chick's book, I think, because there's a love story involved, but this isn't the type of love story that magically ends happily where the impossible becomes possible. Hannah writes the story with the intention of staying true to the history of the war. The beginning of the book is set in the present time, and the story is being narrated by an unknown old woman that you sense has had a troubling past. From there, the book then jumps into the past, and you learn about two French sisters, Isabelle and Vian, who haven't always been close due to family problems, but end up using each other as support during the war. Because of their different circumstances, the war takes them down different paths, but they both manage to learn what it is they'll do to survive. For most of the book, I thought I knew who the older woman narrating was when the story jumped from the past back to the future, but the ending is a twist and still seamlessly connects the past with the future. It's a beautiful story and easily my number one choice as best book of the year. The library, of course, has it, so I'm talking to you guys as well. You won't regret reading it. Clem?
All right, so my number one choice is written by an author I've talked about before, Adam Hochschild, and I'm talking about Spain in Our Hearts, Americans in the Spanish Civil War, 1936 to 1939. So in 1936, Spain had elected a secular government, nationally elected, worked then to limit the power of the church and a lot of host other conservative institutions. That, of course, initiated the backlash of the nationalists who were led by Francisco Franco and who were aligned with the Catholic Church, the business interests, government interests, and who were also backed by aircraft and weapons from fascist Germany and fascist Italy. So there we go. So Spain in Our Hearts focuses on the people, on the Americans, all idealistic young Americans who went to Spain, who heeded the call to defend the Republic, La República, Los Republicanos, against the nationalists, to fight against encroaching fascism, to fight for freedom, and to fight for the people. So Hochschild, once again, this is a beautifully written book. I talked about how well the book I had read by him was the Belgian Congo book, King Leopold's Ghost. That was a great book. Yeah. But however, Evil Robot mentioned how Hochschild's book about the First World War, which apparently is a podcast favorite thing, was also really well written. So Hochschild covers the some folks who fought with the Lincoln Brigade, who fought on the side of the Republicans, how the Republicans were also trying to get support from then Soviet Russia, beg your pardon, and how that was very much, you know, how does one deal sensitively with Stalin? So those tensions within communist in the movement, but also with the nationalist, whether or not the United States was going to get into it, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt's issues with that. Hochschild uses a lot of memoirs and a lot of journals and a lot of letters to tell his story. Of course, the Spanish Civil War did not end well. Doesn't end well for anybody, but it ended with the Nationalists being victorious and instituting decades of totalitarian fascist rule under Francisco Franco. I think this book, once again, is beautifully written. It like Amanda, when people were recalling the book, I'm like, no, it's not. I'm gonna finish reading it, even if I have to turn it in late. So I did finish reading it. It's a really good book. If you want a beautifully written history, a really beautifully researched history about the Spanish Civil War and how really it was a dress rehearsal for the First World War and for other conflicts of the 20th century, of the Second World War, Evil Robot is telling me, check out Spain in Our Hearts. Michael!
Well, long-time listeners may remember that I normally put in, like, a recommendation for nonfiction or bathroom books or that sort of thing, but 2016's other great tragedy other than Amanda's husband killing Prince
is that...
and dumpster fires.
And dumpster fires. Man, he was a busy dude.
He was. I wonder if I'd ever see him.
No, it's that nonfiction kind of a bummer. The best nonfiction book I read this year, I'm reading right now, and long-time listeners may remember I did not have a policy of recommending things that I am reading as of this moment. I'd rather finish it than settle before I recommend. So instead, my number one pick is going to be like one of the first books I recommended this whole year, way back in January, Radiance by Catherine Valente. Yeah, two out of my three recommendations are women. I'm nearly woke. I'm, you know, sleepy.
Gender parity. And again, I recommended books by all men, so womp womp.
I'm nearly woke.
Nearly woke. I'm sleepy.
You hit the snooze button.
Yeah.
On your social conscience.
Yeah. This is about, it's kind of like, it's like an alternate history where people colonize the solar system, but it's this weird, like, you know, people can take these drugs from these whales on Venus so they can, like, just walk around the moon and, like, gravity is not really a thing and, like, they could walk around planets and stuff and each planet has its own culture, like, you know, hey, this moon is all Japanese people or this, you know, Jupiter is mostly German or something like that. And it's also about silent films again. I'm into, like, women filmmakers who like silent films this year, I guess.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's mainly about this one woman who's the daughter of a prominent director in 1982 on the moon. And she disappears, and so he, like, hires a detective to track her down. But, like, the book itself changes, like, genres where, like, the detective, it'll be, like, a gritty noir, and then it'll be, like, this, like, sad, like, autobiography thing where, like, he's this sad loser guy, and then it'll be, like, this comic farce, and, like, the whole book is kind of treated as, like, a film itself where, like, the director, like, slash author, like, changes things midstream. Mm-hmm. It's very, again, I like the experimental crap. What can I say? It's exciting. Of course, it didn't win any awards because of the sad puppies. Because Mike can't win. But I had a good time. Check it out.
Was it because it was also written by a lady?
Yeah, it was also written by a woman, of course, and so, you know.
Don't worry, some women ended up winning that, so.
Yeah, you know. Luckily, N.K. Jemisin, yeah, for the fifth season. I've been meaning to read that.
I am reading it right now.
Is it good?
Yes, it is.
Ooh, well then.
Okay.
But it's a $3 daily deal recently.
All right.
Yeah, hey. Good times. We got Jeremy.
Ooh, it's a $3 daily deal.
$3 daily deal. Ooh. Yeah.
I wanted to say before I reveal my number one pick, Sarah, you said that The Nightingale might could be described as for chicks, and I could see Mike, like, biting his tongue, not making a chick, baby nightingale.
Oh.
Like, oh, it was a bird. Yeah. And so I wrote on my piece of paper here, chick. Baby Nightingale, scree-on.
Scree-on.
just wanted to share that with everyone. And on that note, my favorite book of the year was My Father, the Pornographer by Chris Offutt. Long-time listeners know that I've probably mentioned this book more than I've mentioned Kim Gordon. But no one seemed to notice because it's about porn. And they all like
porn.
Let's talk about porn.
I don't
porn.
Care about girls and bands.
Let's not talk about
porn.
Noise music. Okay. So anyway, last year, Offutt debuted a short snippet from this book in the New York Times Magazine. And as soon as I read it, I was like, I got to read this book because this is an amazing story. And also I've read all his other books and I really like them. So if you were lucky enough to see him at the Southern Festival of Books, then you saw an author who had grown weary of talking about this book. It's a memoir about his father. And he had spent the last several years knee deep in pornography, much of it written by his father. So Andrew Offit wrote hundreds and hundreds of books, something like 400 plus books of pornography in his lifetime. He wrote some science fiction and fantasy books too that were not porn.
But apparently they all were science fiction, fantasy porn.
Yeah, pretty. I mean, he wrote he wrote every kind of porn there is.
He did that Regan.
Yeah, exactly. Hey guys. It writes itself.
So it's being cut from the podcast.
Yep.
First contact.
Mike.
Whoa. Fantastic.
Oh, I like this.
Wow.
Someday the Podmatic Podcast. We'll make it arise from the ashes of the podcast.
Okay.
And cut here.
No, it's like I'm trying to like insert every...
Yeah, you know.
Anyway, so Andrew Offit wrote hundreds of books of pornography and all from his home in Haldeman, Kentucky, which is like in a holler in eastern Kentucky.
Wow.
And so after he died, it was up to Chris Offit, his son, who is an author, and he's written for television, but written several books and short stories and stuff. He currently writes a food article for Oxford American, and it was up to him to pack up all his stuff, his father's office, after he died. He found row upon row upon row of all these paperbacks, and he took it upon himself to sort of create a bibliography for his dad because, you know, his dad did all of this work, but no one's going to research and study this stuff. And so it explores his difficult relationship with his father, the impact that 1,800 pounds of pornography has on a man, and also Andrew Offit's lifetime of hiding his true vocation from the people around him. People knew that he was a writer, but he kind of didn't leave the house much and didn't – like the kids knew at some point, but he would just work on a book and then the mom would type it up and they'd send it off and then he'd be off on the next one and he would have binders with synonyms for different body parts and different sounds that people made and, you know, sex stuff. And fascinating, fascinating book. Really great.
I heard about this on NPR's Fresh Air.
Yeah, yes. He was interviewed on Fresh Air.
Yes,
yeah.
that's how I knew about it. And apparently his wife did the typing of the
book. Yeah, yeah.
That's not awkward.
The dad would finish a book and then the mom would be typing and then he would be started on the next book.
He was prolific.
He was very prolific. And Crystal, Popmatic person, she went to college in Moorhead. It's called Moorhead.
Yeah. Oh, right.
EKU's in Richmond. Moorhead is like the town, the bigger town in the county where Chris Offit's from. Also, fun fact, Kim Davis, national figure for the county clerk in Kentucky, from the same county, and he knew her family.
Oh, wow.
Growing up.
Oh. Wow.
So, yeah.
That was almost a subtle Kim Gordon in there.
I was waiting.
Yeah, I know.
Kim.
Honorary mention. That book I read last year.
Kentucky said Kim.
Yeah, I heard Kim come out.
Kim counts.
I just
check it out.
Girl in a band.
I mentioned her in the very first sentence.
Yeah, I know.
Thanks for listening. Hey guys, what are we doing on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, go.
Okay, Tickling My Fancy, and it's also an honorable mention of a book I read again. Once again, a page turner and written by a woman.
Whoa.
The Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins. The movie came out this year, and I wanted to make sure I read the book, and I read the book first, and just keeping with the theme, it's a page-turner, and has an unreliable narrator, really enjoyed it, and just highly recommend. If you've seen the movie, I would still highly recommend The Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins.
Woohoo! Nice. Amanda?
Amanda, go next? Oh. Okay, so it's finally here.
Bill has left the building.
No, I'm not talking about stupid Christmas. It comes every year. How predictable.
Whoa, okay.
What I'm talking about is the new Gilmore Girls.
Oh.
It's finally here. Mike's excited.
Star Solo, yay.
I've never seen that show.
You should watch
Nor
it.
Nor have I.
Me either.
So
I think I have.
We thought this day would never ever come, but it came. I don't know how it happened. I'm assuming it involved some pretty big monetary enticements. But somehow Netflix managed to get together almost all of the original cast from one of my all-time favorite TV shows ever, and they filmed 4 new 90-minute episodes that catches us up with the Gilmore family after being away for 10 years. So, okay, the first thing that blew my mind, Lorelai is now 48 years old. How did that happen? So she's still gorgeous, and I totally want to steal her hair. But come on, she's 50. What? So when I watched the show originally, I always identified more with her than with Rory, who's now 32. They grew up so fast. So now I'm closer in age to the daughter than I am to the mother, and I knew there was a reason that I hated doing math. So the second thing that was hard is that Richard, a.k.a. Papa Gilmore, is gone.
Edward Herman.
Yeah, Edward Herman died about 2 years ago. R.I.P. And so his character's death is a central plot point for the returning series. And I will admit it was kind of sad to come back to that in the first episode, which was called Winter. So far, I've only watched the first 2 episodes, Winter and Spring. I'm savoring them because I don't want to race through because who knows when we'll get more. So if you see me, please don't spoil it for me because as I mentioned earlier, I might punch you.
I'm not talking about that thing with you. Why didn't you watch them?
Evil robot.
I did not see this coming.
I know.
Wow. Plot twist. Record scratch, gang.
We'll come back. We'll be back next week. We can talk about that.
Evil robot has a heart for tender family drama.
Wow.
So my last fun fact is that the episodes are named Winter, Spring, Summer, and Fall. And yes, all you have to do is call because
yes,
in honor of
you.
Carole King and her song You've Got a Friend, King actually wrote and performed the original Gilmore Girls title song, as well as starring with a recurring cameo role as Sophie, the owner of Stars Hollow's only musical store. Apparently she comes back in the revival, but I haven't seen her yet, so that's something to look forward to. Unfortunately, the episodes right now are only on Netflix, but I have a feeling they will see a DVD at some point, and hopefully the library will order them then. Brian will make sure of it.
Yeah, wow. Started to watch them the other day, but then I had to go to bed. So.
Yeah, I know, it's always so late. It's 90 minutes, and I don't want to have to break in the middle, so I have to make sure I allow myself plenty of time for enjoyment and then pondering.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely.
Didn't right. The show have like the most dense scripts of like any show?
They talk really fast.
They do.
But I never noticed it because I'm from the north. We talk fast in the north. That's what we do. So
really,
I thought it was just normal. I was like, these people talk good. I like them.
These people talk good.
He like, talked pretty one day.
Aaron Sorkin at the Waltons.
That's nice. An interesting combination, but I can totally see it working. There's no mountain though.
Good night, Bud. Good night, John.
Don't wish,
good night.
Don't
what do you mean,
good
night?
Night?
What do you mean, good night?
I'm gonna go to Sarah, what is tickling your fancy?
My turn. All right. Wow. Well, mine's an honorable mention series that I read this year. I already mentioned it, I think, last week, whenever it was. But it's the Princess Diaries series. I read the series of about 11 or so books in about a month's time.
Is that many of them?
Yeah. Well, kind of. There's like the books and then a supplemental book. They're really not
She's
that
got,
long.
Like, a half sister now, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I cataloged some of them. Not like I care. I cataloged them.
Later, after the podcast, Brian watches Gilmore Girls and Mike reads Princess Diaries.
I haven't watched Stranger
Things. Where will Mia go next?
Oh, yeah, I haven't watched Stranger Things yet because I'm reading all the Princess Diaries books. Mike said.
I'm gonna punch you. I can see it.
I haven't watched the Stranger Things because there's Bob's Burgers reruns to watch again and again.
Yep. That makes some sense.
Anyway, okay, so the books are not very long, and they're a lot better than the movies. They may not be saying that may not be saying much if you're not a fan of the movies, but what I loved most about the books is how less Disney-fied they were. Mia was a normal teenager, sorta, and the way her story was told was more realistic as being a teenage princess can be, at least. The movie changes all sorts of details, such as location, who she ends up with in the end, and many other details surrounding her life. As badly as I want to reveal who she ends up with in the end, I won't, so our readers can find out themselves. Or our listeners, I should say. But I will say the location she lives in is New York City, not San Francisco. And her grandmother, the Dowager Queen, is less loving and heartfelt as Julie Andrews.
There's no sin.
That's for sure. and the other most important detail that isn't giving away anything is that Mia's dad never dies in the books. He's alive and well in each book.
If you mildly enjoyed the movies, you'll enjoy the books. The library definitely has them all. Them?
Yes. So, tickling my fancy this week is The Fall, season 3.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yes. On Netflix. So if you're not familiar, The Fall is a television series out of England starring Gillian Anderson as Stella Gibson, a steely, badass detective who was called to Belfast to investigate a series of serial murders of women because the local police are stumped. What follows is a thrilling, tense, creepy, super creepy cat and mouse game between her and the perpetrator of those crimes. I will not tell you because I want you to watch it. It is amazingly acted. It is awesome. It is creepy. You will scream if you're one of these people who reacts viscerally to television like I do. You will be creeped out and then creeped out again and then creeped out some more. And then at the end, and then afterwards, it's still creepy. But it is so good. The Fall, starring Gillian Anderson. We have seasons 1 and 2 on DVD. Season 3, I recently watched, which is the final season. Prepare your hearts, and I really wanted like a tub of carbs to get through it, but I didn't have
a carbo load to watch The Fall.
I needed a tub of carbs to get through it because it's really freaking tense. And
Jamie,
you know,
Dornan, right,
yes, Jamie
guy.
Dornan is play who is the who is Christian Grey plays a pivotal role in The Fall. I'm not going to tell you what role it is, but you will cheer for him, even though it is creepy. It is really good. Please watch it. And I didn't say screonk while I watched it. But I did. I did that. Oh my God, Mike.
I enjoy horror novels, and you know, do only horror stuff during October. I watch one episode of that, and that's too creepy for me. I'm not watching that anymore.
Wow.
There you go, gang.
I watched it by myself.
One episode, and I'm all like, you know, do I really need to see a woman get graphically murdered on screen? I don't need to see that.
I've watched it at night by myself in the midst of an ice storm.
Nope. I'm out.
Also, I will say this, that after the second episode of season 2, I had to pause it. I'm like, nope, that's it. I turned it to 30 Rock. I'm like, I needed a palate cleanser because I was that terrified. So you kind of need to follow it up with something.
I'm hearing about it.
No kidding. I'm curious.
It's really, really good.
I didn't know it was that good.
Mike.
Graphically murdered. And not like slowly, or not quick either. It's like, you know, I'm going to, you know, again, it's like 10 minutes of this. I don't know. I've got life to live.
This is why I needed a tub of carbs.
It takes a while to kill somebody, man. Yeah. You can't just do it.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, geez,
you gotta, like, savor it.
This is like the one question I ever got when I worked upstairs. Like, fun fact, it was the one of the questions I remember. I worked for like 2 weeks upstairs, and one of the questions was, so I want to know how long it takes somebody to die from being stabbed. Where should I go for that? I'm all like, well, the murder section's in the 364.156. Anywho.
The police station's right down the street. Why don't you go ask them?
Here's a copy of Grey's Anatomy. The big names. Yeah.
That'd be cool, you know, whatever. Well, I remember my library code. We're like, you know, in library school, we're taught to help anybody, even if we're slightly creeped out. So.
Yeah. My library code? Here, you should watch The Fall.
Get some peanut butter M&M's beforehand, because that's what I really wanted while I was watching. I wanted Jet's Pizza and peanut butter M&M's. I was that creeped out. I needed comfort.
Interesting. I would not have an appetite.
So I thought that since we're getting towards the end, or hitting the lights, the Pop-Matic's on its death rattle, all that kind of stuff, I thought that each week I'd recommend my favorite thing of that thing. So this week I thought I'd recommend my favorite book ever. It's kind of, you know, tricky to whittle it down for most things, but for my book, it's pretty obvious if you know me, and I know I do, that...
I'm going to start writing it and see if my guess is right.
You're wrong. It's called Inferno by Larry Niven and Jerry Pournelle. And blew my mind when I was 13. You'll notice that a lot in the coming weeks, that everything I recommend I was into when I was like 12, and like my senses of like criticism hadn't really like solidified yet. It's about a science fiction writer who goes to Dante's Hell, and like each and it's updated for the 70s. You know, at one point a dude with an afro runs after them in the Circle of Rage. It's great. And
it's okay, he's still there.
It was really cool, and then it eventually got me into the Divine Comedy by Dante. I recommend the John Ciardi or Ciardi, it begins with a Z, translation, which also blew my mind. Greatest classic ever. My favorite poem of all time. It changed me both mentally and spiritually. Mm-hmm. And I have multiple translations. It's really good. If only I could have been meaning to learn medieval Italian. If I've got the time, I don't.
This is the second time you've talked about hell in recent weeks, because you also talked about Godzilla going to hell.
Yeah. But isn't the Scree-onk. Divine Comedy, isn't that what solidified the Italian language? Is what
yes.
We know
yes. Yeah, yeah, he wrote it in vernacular Italian, and that's
in
how
Florence,
it like, became.
Yeah, and that was what they picked up to mm-hmm. become yeah. like their national.
It was the first book, I guess the first popular book to be written in Italian and not Latin.
Yeah, not Latin. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So the average person could read it as opposed to like a scholar. Although you'd have to afford a very expensive book.
They're all handwritten. And be able to read.
Those Medici's, man, they were fun.
Yeah. Oof.
Jeremy?
Tickling my fancy this week is The Machine, a hot team, a legendary season, and a heart-stopping World Series, the story of the 1975 Cincinnati Reds by Joe Posnanski. I've been wanting to, in the off season since the baseball season ended, I wanted to read some of the baseball books that I've accumulated, and this was the first one that stood out to me. Also, I needed something a little lighter to read after finishing Dreamland, the book about heroin, so I went to baseball, and it is a fantastic book. I'm only like 100 pages into this thing, and already like Pete Rose, Sparky Anderson, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, all the whole team, everybody is like they're coming alive on the page. The author Joe Posnanski is very conversational style, and it's like you're sort of it's like someone who, you know, when someone who's like, yeah, I remember when I was playing and so and so came up to me, like it's like somebody telling you a story of their glory days, like he was there, you know what I mean? I don't know if I'm it's
I
great.
Should have died after baseball, bro.
Oh, Jeremy had a finger.
That's fine. I like hell too. it really is a really amazing book. And also, you know, this past World Series was a really great one. Game 7 was amazing. And this 75 World Series between the Cincinnati Reds and the Boston Red Sox has one of the most famous moments in baseball history with Carlton Fisk like waving his home run ball fair. And anyway, it's a great book. And I'm only 100 pages into it. It can't possibly get bad. But it's fantastic.
Cubs win. Cubs World Series win is one of the few redeeming characteristics of 2016.
That's maybe the only thing.
Fun baseball fact: Zobrist is going to be the Grand Marshal for the Franklin Thanksgiving or Christmas parade.
Really?
Yeah, yes. I just heard that.
Corrections! Who's got them?
I'm not.
Shuffle.
No, it's been 2 weeks.
Nope.
Okay. The only thing I got, the song at the beginning of last week's episode was It's Over from the TV show Steven Universe, performed by the character Pearl, who is voiced by Didi Magno, which is a cool name.
Mm-hmm.
So check out that show on television because
on television.
We have a difficult time getting it on DVD.
I believe it's on an unnamed channel. Does it involve cartoons
on
the network?
It's on the Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
It's on the Cartoon Network. Is that all we got? Nobody else?
Negative. I'm cool, dude.
Cool. All right. For more information about my dad being named Steve, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is Chump on the Goon. You could subscribe to the Popmatic podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS.
But why?
Or don't, because there's only two or more episodes after this.
Well, you can relive the glory.
Yeah, okay. I'd like a subscription to Newsweek, please.
What tickled my fancy in August of 2009?
Oh, yeah, we are going to just rerun these after it's over, right?
You just start back at the beginning and go again.
Boop, 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 boop. It's a Seinfeld theme.
Yep.
next week. Speaking of what, the best music of this year, featuring my hit single.
That did not make my list. No.
I heard a mashup of that and Smash Mouth's All Star. Incredible.
Wow, it sounds like kryptonite.
Yeah, it's the worst. Good thing I don't want any more children. All right.
So, I'm almost done with Stranger Things. I've got one more episode to go.
Oh, cool.
I want to look up which kid is real life. His name is like Finn.
Finn Wolfhard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the hell?
It's
a name.
It's Mike, I think.
Really? Right? And yeah. Oh, wow.
Finally, weird looking. Yeah.
Finally, a Mike is cool.
It took you that long to watch that show.
I haven't
one
yet
more
watched
episode
it.
To go.
So.
I don't
yeah,
even...
seriously. What the
he was being
obstinate.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
I haven't yet watched it because that does cut into my Bob's Burger reruns. But I did finally watch The Fall.
Do you see that there was a Bob's Burger cookbook coming out?
I meant to tell you last week.
It's downstairs.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
But I watched The Fall season 3, and that took me up the courage to watch that because I didn't watch a TV show. I didn't want to watch a TV show about a rampaging psychopath after having to deal one in real life.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
The rampaging psychopath in The Fall is handsomer than the real life one.
Yes, he is. It's like you're like kind of sometimes rooting for him.
Oh yeah, totally. Especially in the first season. Yeah. It's like he's the coolest person on the show. Well, maybe except for Scully, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, yes, Stella. Stella Gibson will kick your ass.
No, see, like for me, she's who I wanted Scully to become.
Yes.
Instead of the way that they read it up writing Scully. So I just pretend that it's Scully from the X-Files. I just pretend because that's who like I want. That's who I want this Scully to be, but they wrote her a different way.
Yes, but there's no Mulder involved, which, you know, honestly, like...
She's just, you know, cat and mouse with a really smoking hot bearded guy.
I know, really smoking hot.
My ears are burning.
It's all good.
Blush.
He wears all black every day, and yes. He tortures.
Oh, your ears are burning.
Yes, he is a misogynist with some deep-seated rage.
Both of our ears are burning.
But it's really good.
You're
that's
blushing.
What. Okay.
I have deep-seated rage, but I'm not a misogynist.
Man, I like setting ears on fire.